Hi, welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host today, and we are going to continue our book club on the book of The Dyslexic Advantage, my favorite book on dyslexia, and we're in chapter 7. We're going to finish chapter 7, page 64 to 67. I take 3 or 4 pages at a time. And today's topic is why putting thoughts into words can be hard with dyslexia. And there's some really great little quotes in here that we'll use as a springboard for discussion and ideas. So in page 64, Dyslexic Advantage points out that often teachers are confused when they know they've got bright students, but when they ask them a simple, open-ended question, those students can find it really hard to explain themselves if they've got dyslexia. Now, I've personally seen this happen with countless student after student and my own daughter and other children with dyslexia. What happens is a teacher thinks they're being really generous and they're saying, I'm going to let you choose your own question on a topic. I'm going to let you, you know, discuss this whole area in any way that you like. Now, this might be a real benefit to a linear thinker who maybe is already on a certain track of thought in that subject. But for a dyslexic thinker, boy, oh boy, oh boy, that can be more of a curse than a blessing, because they are just wide-angled thinkers. They're thinking about everything in that subject, and they get kind of caught like rabbits in a headlight, not knowing which way, where to explain, and what to do. Now, one of the reasons why they say this could be the case is that George Hind and Jeffrey Gilger, in their research, they reckon that some brain regions in a dyslexic's mind have certain areas that are associated with processing word sounds borrowed, in inverted commas, and connected instead to the areas that process spatial processing rather than verbal processing. And Einstein was one of these people who had this difficulty. Einstein's a very famous dyslexic, and they quote Einstein here. I'll share the quote with you before I'll give you their explanation first. Einstein eventually became a talented writer, they say. He once complained that thinking in words was not natural for him and that his usual mode of thinking was non-verbal. And to communicate verbally, he needed first to translate his almost entirely non-verbal thoughts into words. And so you can see this, you know, Einstein was a mathematician, a physicist, and symbolic, abstract thinking, and many of his thoughts were in the non-verbal realm. They were in the abstract, visual, spatial realm. And so it actually took quite a lot of effort to take those thoughts and translate them into words to communicate the idea. So that's what we're talking about. And this is what Einstein had to say about being inventive in mathematics. And in chapter, they reference the psychology of intervention in the mathematical field by J. Hadamard. And this is the quote: combinatory play with nonverbal symbols seems to be the essential feature in productive thought. Before there's any connection with logical construction in words or other kinds of signs which can be communicated to others, conventional words or other signs have to be sought for laboriously only in the secondary stage. So I'll translate what I think that means. Basically, Einstein is saying combinatory play, playing with combining different ideas that are nonverbal, different symbols and ideas and so on, is essential to productive thought. So this kind of non-verbal, non-words, you know, images, doodles, shapes, non-verbal symbols, etc., is his kind of first level of thought And then once you've made those connections and you've played around with them, before there's any logical construction into words, that then takes a really hard labor to get it to the second stage, which is to explain it to someone. And so it's interesting here, you know, we talk a lot in a bullet map about this difference between automatic thinkers and manual thinkers, like an automatic car and a manual car. And here we see another hint towards this. Einstein's describing two stages of thought very clearly differently. There's this first stage of thought, which is very abstract, symbolic, doesn't involve words, very pictorial, three-dimensional, spatial, and then the next stage down, which is bringing it down into words and explaining it, and that's laborsome. It's kind of like going from one gear of thinking down into another gear of thinking to explain it. And so I see this a lot. Dyslexia affects five areas in people once they've learned how to read. First of all, it affects organization, it affects reading comprehension, it affects their listening and note-taking, it affects their memory, and it affects the way they retell things, the way that they explain things. So, what's the solution? Well, they talk about this at the end of page 65, and they say that it's critical that parents, teachers, and later employers learn to recognize that some valid forms of reasoning may be difficult to put into words and may be better expressed as drawings, diagrams, or other forms of non-verbal representation. Which basically means, you know, give them a chance to explain themselves with pictures and something, or things, or prototyping and shaping something that doesn't involve lots of words, because we can get distracted by the words, because we're basically not communicating in our natural language. Our natural language isn't thinking in words necessarily, it's thinking in ideas, in shapes, in sounds, in movements, in things that are a higher level of abstraction than words. And we have to translate them down into language. So those were really interesting comments. And I think finally, they share in page 66 something very interesting. They say that often this language development center in our brain, you know how they've, you know, allocated those resources to the spatial rather than the verbal. Well, that can take a while to develop in a typical person's development. Now, if you've got less of that, it takes longer for it to develop. And so what happens is, they say that people with prominent M strengths, these three-dimensional thinking, is that their language is simply developing along a different pathway than followed by non-dyslexic peers. The brain systems that help translate nonverbal ideas into words are some of the latest developing parts of the brain. Now, what this kind of is talking about is that often we're late bloomers. So what happens is often children, people who are like 22, find that they're ready to go to university if they've got dyslexia. Maybe it didn't work so well when they were 17 or 18 and they went into the job market or some ancillary sort of training or something like that, practical training or other kinds of training, college, and then they found that they could come into university because there's a sort of maturity that happens, not in their intelligence, but their ability to express themselves, their ability to retell things, ability to just express ideas in words, because university, work, our world relies on words so much, whereas our natural language is not words, it's thoughts, it's ideas, it's concepts, it's movements, it's music, it's shape, it's a sense of something. And it's more grounded in the physical sometimes, or in the abstract, ironically. And this middle realm of translating into words can take us longer to develop because the brain takes a bit longer to develop in those areas. So those are my thoughts for today. Practical applications in my own life. I think this thing about, you know, putting thoughts into words is a really big deal for people with dyslexia. And it's very manual for us. You know, we're always often searching for the right word. You know, it's quite intentional. And often I've seen it in some children, you know, it makes you into a wordsmith because you're so intentional about translating your thoughts into words that it actually adds to the communication. But it can go the other way, where you just spend so much time trying to explain it that you just like, oh, I can't explain it in words. I'll just draw it for you. And so I'll tell you something that I've noticed is when I'm having meetings now with my team's growing. You know, there's 7 full-time staff in Bullet Map Academy. There's people affiliated with Bullet Map Academy. I'm getting a lot of information all the time. And so I realize that what I need to do is I need to say, can you please show me what you're saying? And so a lot of people will use words to explain it to you. And then I'm like, I know if we carry on just 5-10 minutes, I'm going to hit my limit and we're not going to get very far in this half hour meeting. So this morning, for example, with my iOS developer, he was describing this and he was describing that. And I'm like, look, mate, we need to draw this out. You need to show me what you're saying. And he's like, oh, I could just type this out and type it for you. And I'm like, no, you need to draw it for me. So we had to go on a web app and connect his iPad to it and take 10 minutes to get it all ready. And I had to show him how I use Miro to collaborate on an online whiteboard between tablet and tablet. And he started to draw. And the moment he started to draw, oh, the relief I felt. And the relief he felt, because he was dumping ideas and leaving them there, and then we would carry on and then refer back to them. And we were both collaborating so much better because we were talking about, you know, back-end systems and databases and all sorts of app connections and all sorts and AWS and all that app stuff in the background. You know, it's quite complex. And so you need a picture. And that's the answer for me so often is I need a picture. Now, if he wasn't going to draw the picture, I certainly was. I was going to draw on my iPad or notes or whatever. But often if you can find someone who's willing, and because I'm the boss, I don't need to ask. I just say, we've got to draw a picture about this. Otherwise, we're not communicating. And so that's one of the beauties of being the boss with dyslexia, because you start saying, look, this is the way we do things here. We do it visually. Show me what you're saying. So that would be the big thing. Show me what you're talking about. Show me the outline of your story. Show me the plan, the business plan, the numbers, whatever it is. Show it to me. Don't just tell it to me. So that's my big tip for today. And over to parent contributions and comments. We've got one parent with us here, live, talking, Deb. Deb, is there anything you want to share before we go to Facebook?
Well, just that speaking makes me nervous because dyslexia affects my speaking.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I always wonder how some people could speak so quickly, because I feel like I use my visual strengths to speak. If I'm trying to think of a word, I actually have to visualize that word before I say it sometimes. And that's not very efficient. And you get people kind of tuning out on you because they're not willing to wait for you to get your thoughts out. I really need to remember that tip about asking my son to show me what he means, using drawing more often. And then for my own self, just drawing instead of trying to put it all into words. That's a great tip.
And I think it's just so simple, so obvious, so powerful, you know, just show me rather than tell me, you know, and if that principle of show rather than tell is, if someone wants to give you a skill, could you just show me? And they're like, oh, okay, fine. And it's so liberating.
I do feel like I'm a better writer than I am a speaker. So I did learn to write fairly well. And if I needed to express myself, it worked better to write an email or write a note. Not that that, it probably took me longer than most other people, but I write well. But yeah, that's a more effective type of communication for me than trying to explain myself.
Well, in that case, you've got, in this analogy, time to translate it into the words by writing it instead of speaking it.
Yeah, I even prefer texting to phone calls for that reason. It's really nice to have texting now. And I find that I can be a little funnier in texting because it just gives me that slight delay, that's, you know, a few seconds delay to make that connection or make some, you know, something a little funnier, which it probably wouldn't have come out in a phone conversation.
And any comments on Facebook right now? Questions on Facebook? Heather is listening to this conversation and she says, interesting, my daughter can understand a math problem, but she struggles to explain how she knows the answer. I make her explain in words, then I help her create a complete sentence for the paper. And so that's interesting. Often in maths problems, our teachers compel us to show our working. And if we don't show the workings, then we don't get the results. And this is one of the strangest phenomenons that you often see with people with dyslexia, is that they see the question mathematically, and then they can tell you the answer, very complex working out, but they just kind of know it. And then, but they can't give you the workings out. And the teacher's like, well, how do you know that answer? And there's something deep working in a non kind of verbal realm that is doing that computation and it comes out. And so, you know, I used to love those math problems where, you know, the workings out didn't matter. You just needed the right answer and that was it. And so that's often a common one. Rach Oland says, I have the worst time finding my words in conversations or public speaking. Definitely appreciate the idea of showing what you mean. Yeah, I think hands down, and it's an interesting thing also, if you've got a boss who is dyslexic, this is a killer tip. Start communicating with them every single time visually. So, for example, if you're going to have a call on Zoom, share your screen sometime, put some notes up or something like that so that there's a visual to go along with it. If you're meeting in the coffee room and you write some notes or you doodle it out, you bring it a big bit paper and you just write it out and you don't say I'm doing it for you, you say you're doing it for yourself, but the other person really appreciates it. And I tell you what, if your boss has got mild to moderate dyslexia, you will find your help them make better, faster decisions with you and you'll accelerate. I mean, that story about Richard Branson that he shared, it's a well-known story. You can go and look it up on YouTube. But what he does is he describes the moment he learned the difference between gross profit and net profit. Now, this is a basic concept that pretty much everyone in business knows. But Branson, when he was in his 40s, owned a multi-million pound, I think billion pound set of companies in Europe, and they were having a director's meeting, annual director's meeting. Someone shared the accounts and they were talking about the gross profit and the net profit. And his director friend beside him noticed something with Branson. And after the meeting, he leaned over to Branson. He said, Branson, Richard, do you know the difference between gross profit and net profit? And Branson looked back and said, I don't. All I know is if my customers are happy and we're making more money than we're spending, we're okay and we're doing it right. And so his friend, the director, said, would you like me to explain it? And Branson says, yeah, yeah. And so what the director did was he pulled out a napkin and drew him a picture. And Branson had probably had this explained to him before, but because he drew him a picture and he said, Imagine this is the sea with lots of fishes, and then we throw out a net, and then those fish that are in the net are the ones we get to take home from the business. Everything on the bit of paper is all the fish the business has caught, and everything that's in the net is what we are allowed to take home net profit as directors. The rest is there to run the company, and that's the difference between gross profit and net profit. And Branson was like, I got it, and that's great. He went away and started boasting to lots of people, net profit and gross profit. He was so proud he had learned this, you know, delighted by this. And the difference was he got a drawing drawn for him. Okay, we actually did a video on that for kids. We should put that in the comments. Any final questions before we wind this coffee time up? Deb, any reflections?
I do think that people who are visual, thinking in pictures is so much faster and speaking is so slow. So I'm wondering if it's just hard to get all these swirling thoughts and pictures into this slower way of communication that's possible. I'm not sure if that's what you were reading earlier, but that occurred to me that they're probably thinking faster than they can speak, I would think.
Yeah, you are actually. We've talked about that before in Bullet Map Academy quite a few times, and that is that your thinking speed, your listening speed, you can listen at, well, we speak at about 120 words a minute, somewhere between 100 and 120. Slow speakers and fast speakers, maybe a very fast speaker, 140, something like that. But we listen much faster. So if you doubled up that speed, you could actually still completely make sense of it at 200 or 250 words per minute. Some people can even listen at 300 or 400 words a minute, which we can't possibly speak that fast, but we can listen that fast. Now there's listening that fast, and there's also thinking that fast. And we can often think faster than the person speaking. And so if you're a very fast thinker, and you're thinking visually or whatever, that person is not painting a visual picture fast enough for you. It's like a dot matrix printer. And you're like, blooming heck, draw the picture for me. Oh, I've got this detail to share with you. I've got that detail. No, don't give me the detail. Just draw the outline so I get the picture. And they just take forever with lots of little words and so on. And teachers do this in classes as well. And they go, I'm going to teach you this little fact. I'm going to teach you this little fact and this little fact and this little fact and this little fact. And do you know what? In the next 3 hours, you will understand what I'm talking about in general. And you're like, hold on a minute. Just tell me in 5 minutes first, then go into the detail. Oh, no, 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 no. That would spoil the surprise, the big unveil at the very end. No. I can't do that. And you're like, hold on a minute. I'm old enough to now to say, no, that's not on. Give me the headlines. Tell me what you're talking about. Give me the big picture so I can fill it in with the detail. Otherwise, in the next 3 hours, I'm walking away. That's not for me. That's not my way of doing things. And I'm not going to waste my time on you as a teacher if you're going to teach me like that. Unfortunately, kids can't do that. So, do you know one little tip that is really useful in a conversation is to use the word like. So if you're speaking to someone and they're not talking in visual language, they're just talking in words, not concepts, you then can say, is it like a house on a field beside a pond? Or is it like a flock of birds moving and how they're in V-shaped and they're and so on? And the person's like, it is a bit like the birds in the V-shape and so on. You're like, right, I've got a picture, I can relate to it. And so what you're doing is you're constantly calibrating to a bigger picture. And so one way you can encourage other people to speak your visual language is to say, is it like this? Is it like that? Is it like that story? Is it like that film? You know how in the movies they say, oh, this is like Die Hard meets Pretty Woman, you know, this movie. And you're like, oh, I can picture Die Hard. I can picture Pretty Woman. I kind of know where you're talking about. And you're talking my language. you know, rather than, oh yeah, there was this guy and then he met this woman and then he did this and then he did that. And you're like, oh, come on. What's the big picture? So, do you know what I mean? You use the word like, and then you're actually encouraging them into this higher level non-word realm.
That's a good tip to ask it as a question too, because if you tell them it is like this, they're probably not going to get it. But if you ask them, is it like this? Then they can, think for themselves and, maybe control the conversation instead of you taking control and telling them what it's like.
Yes. And in a way, it ties in with that other feature we talked in a previous episode where we talked about the importance of getting feedback and that rapid calibration. And so you can do both at the same time. You can say, look, it reminds me, it kind of feels like you're saying it's like this. And they're like, not really. It's more like that. Oh, right. Okay. So you're getting a combination of calibrated to what they're saying and also speaking in a language that you speak, which is visual rather than word. Okay, guys. So I'm going to tie up this podcast. If you like this episode, go listen to more of our podcast episodes on Dyslexia Explored on whatever channel you can find a podcast. You'll find us there at the top rankings. Just put in dyslexia and we'll be there up at the top there, Dyslexia Explored. So if you want to know more about how to explain your ideas and retell your thoughts, we do that at Bullet Map Academy a lot. We teach children, teenagers and adults how to do this practically with how to organize their ideas visually. And you can explore that at bulletmapacademy.com/retell. Now, I don't know if that's active yet, but it will be active by the time you listen to this. Or you could go to bulletmapacademy.com/workshop, where we've got practical workshops on how to organize your ideas, plan them, plan your week, plan your day, plan what you're going to say, that sort of thing. It's really a useful skill to translate all these ideas into a picture that you can get your head around, a map, and do something with it. So join us there. So I hope you've enjoyed Dyslexia Explored, and we're going to have a number of guests come join us over the next episodes. I'd say in about 3, 4 episodes' time, we'll finish this kind of book club spell and start having some guests coming in and joining with us, telling us their dyslexia story. So, see you in the next episode. Bye bye for today. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.